We're in the middle of Mishnah Hey. Perek Aleph and Perek Yavos, Mishnah Hey. To recap the Mishnah said, Yoisi ben Yochanan ish Yerushalayim, Oimer, he based the Pasuk Levach. The first half of the Mishnah wasn't so related, but we're just going to go through it because it's one Mishnah. Your house will be opened, expansively opened. You should have poor people as part of your household. Al Tarba, this is the part that we're up to. Don't speak too much to the woman. Mishnah says that this woman, this woman that we're speaking about is even your wife. Much more so in your friend's wife or someone else, just that's not your wife. More that a person speaks to women, he just causes bad for himself. And he neglects Torah study. In the end, he will inherit Gehenna. So we're up to the end of the Mishnah. That the Mishnah was speaking about speaking to women. That you should basically try to refrain from speaking to women as much as possible. So the Bar Tanura, the Pashut Pshat, has three simple explanations to what this means. The first shot means, he says, is that I told him that when your wife is in nida, certain times over there, there's a little more distance that's necessary, and therefore to limit the talking with one's wife. Second shot is that we learn out from Korach. The Midrashim speak out that Korach was almost incited by his wife to start the homachlokes. His wife basically, shepherded him until he started the homachlokes. And the third pshat is an interesting, more of like a psychological pshat almost, is that in the course of just schmoozing with one's wife, is all in relation to one's wife, the Bar Tanur is explaining the Mishnah. In the course of schmoozing with one's wife, so a person could come to say, this guy said that I don't know how to learn today, and then she'll say, she'll carry on with that conversation. And by saying things like that, you basically lower your own stature in the eyes of your wife, which is never a healthy thing in a relationship. So basically, the Bar Tanur learns, for all these reasons and for many more, just basically limit the amount of schmoozing with one's wife. Rabbeinu Bachya says a very extreme, maybe it's more of a Middle Ages shot, but he says like this. He says that, hopefully this doesn't happen to anyone, he says that if the husband and wife talk too much, they can end up arguing. And in the end, if they argue too much, he could end up hitting her, and when he hates her, he could end up killing her. So that's why the Mishnah says, don't talk too much, because in the end, you could be Yerush Gehenim. You could end up doing really bad things that cause bad. Okay, hopefully this doesn't apply to anyone.
Theoretically, you might end up arguing.
Theoretically, yeah. No, the best is to stay away from arguments, I guess. Basically, the less you speak in that sense, the better it is. You could look up the cases of Bill Clinton throwing plates at Hillary and things like that. So I guess it does happen nowadays. So, the Mishnah ends off. Calls man.
As a word, the word yorish, thinking about it, the word he's gonna. What does it mean? He's gonna yorish, inherit Gehenim. It's an interesting thing to say.
It is.
Inheritance isn't something you inherit.
Right.
It could mean that he's gonna have children that are gonna be. He's not gonna have holy children. His inheritors are gonna have Gehenim. That if you're talking too much to your wife and you're getting into, you might end up not having holy children if you're spending too much time just having fun with your wife.
Ah, I hear. I thought you were, that's interesting. You could explain that in many different ways. One, like what you're saying, another way you could explain is that Yorish Gehenim is that your kids are going to be bad, because if you end up speaking too much, like Rabbeinu Bachya says, you're going to be fighting all the time.
Right.
And then what are your kids going to see? So that's like, inheritance of Gehenim. Or you could say that's just general,
Can I quote you?
Ovadia. That's from Rabbi Ovadia. Fine. The Mishnah ends off. The more that you speak to the woman, he causes bad for himself. And he has bittul Torah. And so for Yerushkinim, it could have come to inherit Gehenim. So the Tiferes Shlomo asks a very interesting question. He says, "Why does it say that someone who schmoozes with a woman a lot, he's bittul Torah?" Anyone who shmoozes a lot, you shmooze a lot with guys, you're going to be built with a ritter. It has nothing to do with a woman or a man. It just has to do with shmoozing. So why does it say, are you built with a ritter? As if it's a miuchata here. So he has a very unique answer. He says that there's a difference between shmoozing with a guy and a girl. Obviously, we're talking from the perspective of a man who has the chiyuv of Torah. That when you shmooze with a guy and you waste time, so the time that's wasted is wasted. And right after, you say, okay, fine, we have to get back into learning, let's get back into learning. And you get back into learning. I'm thinking when a guy smooths with a woman, so then he starts afterwards, even after the conversation, he starts thinking, I should have said this, I should have said that. There's a lot more innuendo and things going on in his head in relation to smoothing with a woman than with a man. And that stuff can carry on even after the conversation when it comes in relation to talking to a woman. So therefore he says, he explains the Mishnah means two things. He says, a person that schmoozes a woman, goyim bo la'atzmai. Why? Because he's wasting time. He's schmoozing. He shouldn't be schmoozing. He should be sitting and learning. Right? And then, uvoitim midiritah, and then afterwards he starts to think about all the he said, she said stuff of the whole conversation. And that's the uvoitim midiritah. Meaning there's two even worse level of the just schmoozing with a woman that comes out from this whole thing. When it comes to the Maisa, meaning this Mishnah is a very controversial Mishnah, so to speak, with the women, being that it's saying not to speak too much of them. So how do you deal with this? How does the one deal with this? So when it comes to this, obviously you have to speak to a Rav. Such things, you know, some people would learn up this Mishnah, it means nothing, and for sure you could speak to any women, you know, as we see certain sects of Judaism hold that, you know, speaking with women is not a big deal. And certain sects would say that if, if the lady in the restaurant is coming to serve you food, you don't answer, you don't talk to her. You know, if the stewardess on the plane asks you if you want water, you just ignore her. You know, like, there could be various extremes of how to take this Mishnah. So anyone who really wants guidance in such a thing definitely has to speak to a rabbi. And there are some tzaddikim, I mean, that walk around with earplugs and have blacked out windows and, you know, like, don't want to hear the voice of a woman. And there are some tzaddikim that meet women and speak to them eye to eye and face to face and everything like that. one of the big tzaddikim of the last generation, or the Ribnitzer Rebbe, I probably mentioned before, I'll probably mention again, my father was very close to him. He was a huge bar mitzvah. He's from Russia. He was born in like 18 something and he lived 112 years till 1996. And he just did moysim and moysim, and he just fasted and davened and just did yeshuas for everyone. That was his life. So
he's the guy who's up on your wall?
Yeah, he's with the pictures on the wall. He was mamish, not in this world. His davenings and everything was amshinov. Like he was, you know, davening chatzos at 4 in the afternoon and then shachar at 6 the next night. You know, like he had hours that were very different. And one time they have a story, a famous story with that some guy came into the shul and they were like starting mincha, and it was like, it's like 10:30 at night. No, Asher, Asher, they got a minion together. And he said, Rebbe, it's nighttime. And so the Rebbe said, no, come with me to the window. And he like opened the window, and the guy saw or like light, like beaming, like from some other world. He was like, okay, I'm not going to argue with the Rebbe's davening. There's another story someone told me recently, the Ribnitzer. I hate to get Ribnitzer Rebbe. Another story someone told me recently, he said that.
Oh, you're talking about the Ribnitzer?
The Ribnitzer, Ribnitzer Rebbe. No, he passed away in 96. So another story someone just recently told me, he said that someone was, he used to try to daven with a minion that people didn't, that hadn't davened yet, meaning a minion with mispalim. And he didn't force anyone. People would be connected to the Rebbe. They would make sure to daven. One time they didn't have anyone. And some bacher walked in and he was like, how could you daven? How could you do that? And then he just like turned to me like, you daven mincha already? And the guy was like, totally forgot daven mincha that day. It was like 10 at night. He was like, no, I didn't. The Rebbe said, okay, so you could daven. But he saw that the guy hadn't daven mincha. He was like coming against him. Some story like that. I can't say the Rebbe had like pure Ruach HaKodesh and pure, these things were unbelievable with him. But the Rebbe, they say, even though he was obviously with Tachas, Kedusha, and Tahara, and everything like that, but he would speak to women and at times. And the Rebbetzin, his Rebbetzin, who's still alive now, once told me that they were on an airplane once, and the Goyish stewardess was coming around the aisles with drinks, and the Rebbe took one look at her, and he didn't speak English, so he told the Rebbetzin, he said, ask the lady what's wrong with her, like what's bothering her. So the Rebbetzin said, the rabbi is here, I don't want him to enter, you know, whatever, he has a very special rabbi, he just wants to know if everything's okay, like if anything's bothered. And she bursts out crying, and she's like, I don't know how this person knew what I'm going through just right now. I'm going through. And she was like crying. She stood there for like 5 minutes telling the Rebbe like all her stories, and the Rebbe gave her like a bracha or something. Like, he used to see, but he used to see a lot deeper than the, you know, what was going on, the drinks or whatever. Anyway, so you have to have guidance. But the Sfas Emes, though, gives us a little etza, a little specks of some guidance, at least from him, as to what to do. He asks the question. He says, this mission is telling us, we know in general in Chazal, it says in Kedushin, that Gibor v'isha erva, that even just schmoozing with a woman stam is considered erva. Now that I just speak to a woman stam, that's mamash considered like erva. So if so, how could this mishnah come along and say that marbe sicha is bad? A lot of speech is bad. It says Gibor v'isha erva. Any speech to a woman is bad. So it seems to be a contradiction. What are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to not speak at all, or only a lot of speaking is bad? So he answers like this. He answers that it could be based upon, if you look at it in the context of the whole Mishnah, about from the first half of the Mishnah. The first half of the Mishnah was speaking about hospitality. It was speaking about based on Pesach Levacha, that you should open your house, you should have guests, you should have aniyim. Your house should be an open house. So he says that when a guy is bringing in a male guest, so in order for that to happen, like we mentioned last week, for the person to come in and feel expansive when he comes into your house, to feel calm, to feel like he's getting a new, fresh lease of life when he walks into your house, so you have to schmooze with him. He's going to open the door and say, here's the couch, sit down, you know? You have to sit there, you have to like say hello, where are you from, what's up, you know? You want a drink, you know, you basically schmooze with him a little bit and fine. So that's what you do when it's a man with a man. And also, now in the Sasana says that when it's a woman, such things are required, but obviously to a much smaller extent. Meaning, a man should not bring in, if he's bringing in some lady to his house, whatever, for a guest, whatever it is, so he's not meant to sit there schmoozing with her, but to bring her in and say, can I get you a drink? Here's your bedroom. If you need anything, I'll be here. The basics of what you need to get her in and make her feel comfortable is definitely something that you need to speak to her about. So he says, basically, from that we see that Dibur Be'erva is that stam. You're walking around the street, the shmuz with a woman is totally awesome. But when it comes to this, when it comes to bringing guests into the house and it happens to be a woman, there, Ma'ar B'Sicha, too much speaking is no good, but a little Sicha is not so bad. And that gives us like a little more focus, is that like when you walk into a store and, you know, you need to buy something, you could say, can I get that? Yeah? Okay, thank you very much. You know, you could say thank you. You know, according to this, you could say anything that's formal and normal to a person in such interactions. However, anything more than that is not necessarily or needed. Sometimes Americans have a hard time with this, being that we're very, very cordial, and we like to be very, very expressive. You know, my wife gives the example of the time that she sees sometimes, like, you know, a woman with like two babies on her and another three babies in the carriage, and she's schlepping up like three flights of steps, you know, outside, like a whole thing, and some chassid will be like, you know, shalazor. So she goes, yeah. So he like helps her up two, three flights of steps, and then she's like, thank you so much, I couldn't have done it without you. They're like effusive praises to this person who's like, you know, covering his eyes and walking away. You know, he did the mitzvah. Say thank you and then go right there. The point is that to keep everything very dry and formal, and not to have it with too much connection. There's a story that's told about Rav Shlomo Freifeld, the Rosh Yeshiva from Shar Yossi and Farakle, that he once had a Talmud who just, his cousin, Talmud's cousin, got married. So
when he's Rabbi Freifeld?
Rabbi Freifeld. So he hadn't been schmoozing with Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Freifeld. And he said, yeah, my cousin Rizki, he said, I don't know the names, I'm just making it up. He said, she's not Rizki anymore. She's Mrs. Schwartz to you. I said, no, she's my little cousin. He says, no, before she was married, she was Rizki. Now she's Mrs. Schwartz to you. So he was basically teaching him that also, there's a very big aspect that's brought down by many people, not to address a married woman by her first name, to say like, you know, hi, whatever your name is, but rather use the more informal, the family name or some other way to refer to them, rather than the more intimate way of referring someone by their first name. There is such a concept that's brought down about that. And myself, from this Mishnah, we can also learn out a few pretty big lessons in Shalom Bayis. Maybe it's already mentioned in Begon HaShalom, but I don't know. So I didn't finish the whole book yet. So it says over here, it's through Diyukin. Gemara like Diyukin. It says over here in the Mishnah, Al Tava Sicha Ina Isha. It says, don't talk too much to a woman. So one can make an inference from that, that we have three different ways of connecting to people, three different ways that we connect and we deal with people and the world around us. We have thought, speech, and action, right? Machshava, dibor, and maisa. So the Mishnah could be saying, al taba sicha ema isha. Don't speak too much. I mean, a lot of times when you come to a relationship with your wife, you just want to say, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. The Mishnah is telling us, al taba sicha ema isha. Maybe decrease a little bit your sicha and put a little bit more into the thoughts, actually thinking, wow, how much my wife really does. Still they say thank you. But instead of, oh, you know, just like dry, thank you, thank you, thank you, oh, thank you so much, everything was delicious. Instead, think a little bit for 5 minutes. Think of what she did today for you, how much she did for you. And then, action. Maybe put a little more focus on the action. Maybe put a little bit more focus on getting her things, nice things sometimes. Avada, still speak out all the thank yous and all the kind things like that. But the Mishnah could be teaching us, al tabas picha misha, don't just expect everything to go perfect because you say thank you a billion times over and you... Sometimes a little thought and a little actions also add to that effect. Another deal that you can make from the words al tabas picha misha is, for Shalom Bayis, is that it's talking towards the man. This is actually directed toward the man. It says, al tarbe, it's talking to the husband. Stop talking so much. Al tarbe sicha amisha. Listen a little bit. Your wife's talking and you're always telling her, no, this is what I think about this, and this is what I think about that, and this is what I think. Al tarbe sicha amisha. Don't speak so much and listen a little bit to what she's saying, how she sees the world, and try to integrate that into your connection to her rather than just trying to teach her how you see the world and how you always see things. The Rav of Chemelnik, the Chemelniki Rav, I don't know who that exactly, Sefer Shmuel Tzvi, he has a very cute twist on this. It's a way that, you know, tongue in cheek, so to speak. He says that the Mishnah speaks in the beginning also about bringing guests. He based up Pesach Lervacha, Yamim Nevei Secha, bringing guests. So the story happens very often in married homes, and you have, like, you know, 35 minutes before lech benching, you know, the bachur calls you up and says, you know, I think it's a little late, I'm not sure, but can we come over with four guys, you know, for the Friday night meal? You know, you're like, so your wife's already screaming, no. So then he says, the Mishnah's telling you, your wife's telling you, I made all the chicken, I made all the soup, there's nothing extra, we have everything cleaned out. No! You tell her, al tarbe. He says, put the comma right there, al tarbe. Listen, you know, you don't have to make any more food. We're just going to divide up the food a little bit smaller, and we're going to have enough. Sicha ema isha, he says. Tell your wife, al tarba, basically. Al tarba, you don't have to make anything more. Don't worry, it'll work out. We'll cut the chicken in quarters, and everyone will have half a knedel and so a knedel, and everything will be all right. So that's his way
As
long as enough croutons. Yeah, croutons make the meal. That's the end of the Mishnah 5. We'll just get a little bit into Mishnah 6, into Mishnah Vav a little bit. It says, Yeshua ben Prachi v'nita abeli kibu mihen. They accepted from the last two peers. Yeshua ben Prachi omer, he said, famous Mishnah, Asei l'cha rav, make for yourself a rav, get yourself a rebbe. Uknei l'cha chavar, acquire yourself for yourself a friend. And judge every single person favorably. So the Bat Tanura says, what does it mean, Asei l'cha rav? He says it means that a person should always, always have a rav. No matter how old he is, no matter which level he is in Yiddishkeit, he has to always have a rav. There's a famous thing with Rav Shlomo Volbi, who's the Mashgiach, that whenever he always had a rav his whole life, even though he was basically like 95 when he passed away, his whole life when he was like 80 something, his rav passed away, I don't know if I remember what it was, so he went looking for a new rav. Like, he spoke to different Gedolim and different people, and he found like the Ajva Rebbe, like one of the Rebbes, Hasidus Rebbes, and he, even though he was totally from the Litvish world, he took this as his Rebbe, and he was his Rebbe for like 5 years, and he passed away, and he looked for another Rebbe. Like, he would look for Rebbe at any time, even though he was Mamish, and he was, you know, the Gedolei Hador. But a person should always try to have a Rebbe. What? I don't know, man. I'm still looking for my Rebbe, so.
No, so but books.
Yeah, there is such a thing. The Maisa. He says, the Bat Tanura says, he explains also that, even though it says later on that you should have many, you should learn from everyone, he says that's good for when you're learning, like when you get a lot, like a well-grounded grasp of Torah learning. You want to get like the logics of the Torah, so if you chop the Brisker Mahalach and you chop the Litvish Mahalach and you chop the Chassidim and everything, so you understand Torah in a very varied way, it's very good. But you want to just receive a minhag, like how to be a Yid, how to go in life, he says it's very good actually to have one Rebbe. I say that the Rav is to have one Rebbe that you kind of follow. Obviously, you know, if he's no more, then you have to find a new one, but as far as you can take it, you should have one Rebbe. Rav Nosson has a famous explanation from this Mishnah, pretty famous for the breast verse. He says that you should always have a Rav, like what the Bartimaeus is saying. He says, yeah, asei lecha Rav, but if for whatever reason, one reason or another, you can't have a Rav, it's not working, you're in some far out town or whatever it is, you're just not finding the Rav yet, he says, knei lecha chaver, then you have to find a friend. What does a friend mean? Knei, kane is a reed, is a quill. It's a cute play on the words. Kane is a quill. So what's a quill? In those days, that's the way they would write all the books, all the svarim. So he says, knei lecha chaver, your svarim, the quill, the books that are written, should be your chaver. That should be your friend. Meaning you should go and search and search and search for a real tzaddik, a live tzaddik, because as it's brought down in the Kutumran and everywhere, there's a huge difference between, you know, reading books and svarim, which are great, and actually receiving from a living Rebbe. But if for whatever reason you can't, and you're not, and you're, or even if you're just not succeeding, like, you know, you're looking for a Rebbe and you haven't yet found him, so then knei lecha chaver, take the books, whichever books of all the tzaddikim, and learn them, so that will be your inspiration until you actually find living living Rebbe. Yisfas Emes says the word Rav, we say generally it means a Rav in this context, so it means to find a Rebbe. He says Rav could also mean a master. So then what's the Mishnah telling you? Asei lecha Rav. Lecha is to you. The Mishnah would be telling us then in a, you know, Hasidish way of looking at it, Asei lecha Rav. You should make yourself a master. Which means take control over your desires, take control over your tzara, and make sure that you are in control over yourself. That's what Asei lecha Rav would mean. And I said, how do you get to that? It's not such an easy thing to say, you know, Asei lecha Rav, that I'll be a sholet, I'll be someone who has control over my own insides, my own yitzhara. So some of the other things that Pshatim can help us with this. A lot of times nowadays, especially, the yitzhara comes along and tells a person, you know, you're never going to do full tshuva, you're never going to really be a big talmid chacham, you're never really going to serve Hashem your whole life, you're never going to really finish shas, you're never going to really do these things. And he gets us down by doing those things. He makes us small, he makes us feel like we're insignificant and we're never going to accomplish anything in life. So this Chus Avais, one of the Mefarshim on the Mishnah here, says, that's what Asei Lecha Rav is telling you. It says, like the Sfasema says, Asei Lecha, make yourself, but here he means Rav, he means literally like a Rav, like a Rebbe, like a Rebbe. He says, make yourself like a Rebbe. Meaning, in your own head, you should pump yourself up and imagine yourself that you are a Rabbi, you're a Rebbe, or something like that. And by doing that, even though it's not true, obviously, maybe, is that even though it's not true, still you're going to hold yourself to higher standards than if you were just holding yourself like the way the Yetzirah kind of forces you to imagine yourself, that you're a nobody. So I'm a nobody anyways, what's the difference if I do this? What's the difference if I waste a couple minutes? But if in your head you're saying, what do you mean? Imagine I'm like a big Rav, imagine like a big Rebbe. I'm not going to waste time in between this, I'm not going to speak like this, I'm not going to just do these things. So when you imagine yourself like that, all of a sudden, many of the things that you wouldn't necessarily be involved with, you're able to accomplish much greater things. And Yosef Olav, he adds on to that pshat, he says the same thing is with mitzvahs. A lot of times a person will say, you know, I do the mitzvahs, I do them pretty good, it's okay. But when and if he would imagine himself as being a big rav, so then he wouldn't necessarily, you know, envision himself like that. He would envision himself a little bigger, so he has he holds himself in greater ways, so he'll be more stringent and he'll be more careful in the mitzvah, in his mitzvah observance. Another obstacle to this, like what the Sfasemes is saying, I say lecha rav, that you should be able to be a rav on yourself, to be a shalit, to make sure that you have control over your whole self, is that a lot of times that we try to have control over ourselves, but when things get very vague in where and how we're supposed to act, so we have subjectivity, and then we'll rationalize all the things that we do and say, well, it's not so bad, and this is not so bad, yeah. So the Rav Chaim Volozhin, the Nefesh HaChaim, says on this, he says, therefore, asei lecha rav, make sure you have a rav, uknei lecha chaver, and make sure you also have a friend, and that you constantly go to the rav and the friend to make sure that they tell you, from an objective point of view, am I really supposed to do this? Is this really a good thing or a bad thing? Your subjectivity will always distort your perspective on things, and therefore you should always try to go to a Rav who will, and he says also a friend, who will be able to guide you and from an objective perspective and allow you to find the right way to get to the right way to get what we need to get to. We'll just try to finish off another 2 or 3 minutes. Sasema has another perspective on this mission. He says, Aselecha Rav means that you can learn from yourself. Aselecha, you should make yourself a Rav. Who is yourself now? He says your physicality. He says, look at your body. When you have all of a sudden, you know, like when your Rebbe in 8th grade would say, if you're going to great adventures today, you get up very early in the morning, you know? Whatever it is that you're, you know, you have a chiyus for, your body has a chiyus for, all of a sudden it runs for food, it runs for all these things. So how much more so when you come to spiritual things that you should learn from your very body that has all this energy to focus it into the spiritual things. So in a similar way, if you're saying Asel Harav is talking about the Rav in yourself, it brings us back to the famous muscle from the Rebbe. That he says, you know, there's a yid, whoever he is, Moishala, whatever he is, he has a dream that there's a treasure under the bridge in Vienna. Famous story that the Rebbe says. The people bring it down different ways, but he travels all the way there to the bridge, and he's sitting there looking, how is he going to get this treasure out? And a cop pulls up to him and says, what are you doing here? He says, you know, I don't know what to say. I had a dream there was a bridge. It's crazy, but that there's a treasure under the bridge. Just figuring out how to get it. He says, you stupid Jews, I had a dream that Moshe from, you know, this town, which is his town, has a treasure between these two big oak trees in his backyard. He's like, wow, I have two big oak trees in my backyard, you know? And he, sure enough, he goes back to his hometown, he digs up in his backyard, and he finds his huge treasure. So the Rebbe says that what's the nimshal for such a muscle is that, Nachman says this. So he says that very often we have to travel very far. We travel all the way to Uman or wherever we're going. And we travel to a tzaddik, and then we find that the tzaddik was really within us. It was really inside of us. So why do we have to travel to the tzaddik? Because that's the way. You have to travel to the tzaddik, and he's able to open up your insides to be able to find the tzaddik that is within you. So if that's the case, this Mishnah would be saying a similar thing, that Asel Harav is that when you want to find basically he's telling you that you should make yourself a Rav, meaning go ahead and try to find the Rav within you. And the Rebbe in one of the Torahs, he says that the way to do that, and there's three different lights that a person has to seek out: a light of the Rebbe, and a light of the friends, and a light of himself. And a light of himself, he says, is to do this: when a person speaks to Hashem, he opens up the light within himself, and he can find that Rav within. Obviously also trying to find the Rav, a Rebbe, like the Mashal says, that helps, and going to friends, they give you a perspective, and they also open you up in different ways. And then taking all that and speaking to Hashem with it, she was able to all find the Rav within. She go, yeah.